You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded.
Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today, I have Will Pepper. I've been wanting to get this on for a long time, Yeah. Thanks for coming on, man.
Dude, Kenneth, thank you for having me, bro. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Beautiful park.
You know, before we start, I want to really shout out to Alex Jung. We lost him a few days ago. And I know that you are in the same community as Alex, and you've kept in touch with him all these years, and me too. And just wanted to hear just a little tribute before we get started.
Yeah, man. I met Alex years ago. There's not many Vietnamese comedians in the scene, so yeah. We all kind of know each other. But it's so crazy. Last week, he asked, my family made bantek, and he's like, bro, I gotta try some. So my parents mailed him some bantek.
No.
Like a week ago, or a week or 2 weeks ago. And then he like sent me a picture of him eating it. And then he's like, dude, this is just what I needed. And I thought he was doing better. So it's very sad.
We all thought he was doing better.
Yeah.
I hear stories like that all the time. Yeah. I'm laughing because he's just a funny dude. And like, I'm laughing about that, but...
Yeah, the first time I met him was like, I don't know, 4 years ago. And then we were at this like film fest.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know anyone there, so it was kind of awkward. So when I saw him, I was like, oh, I like knew his face. So I'm like, oh, it's another Vietnamese comic. And it was just us just kicking it. And he was like, I was like talking to this girl. And then I was like, man, I don't know what to do. I don't know if she likes me. He's like, bro, trust me. You're young. I wouldn't even think about getting married or anything right now. Just do your thing. And we're just cracking up. So he's a great dude, man.
Yeah, he's a great dude. And you know, when you study his comedy, what you realize is that he did a lot of work. Yeah. To get to the bits that he did, you have to like work it over and over, you know, and I think most comedians, like in the real big world, not the famous ones, but the ones that are coming up, you can tell the ones that put the work in.
Right.
You know, because the bits are like tighter. Polished and tight. Yeah, tighter. Yeah. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, they're tighter. Yeah.
And he's been on the grind. Like
he's been on the grind, yeah.
He started, I toured with Jason Chenney, and I know they started around the same time.
Mm.
Like this was like 13 years ago or something.
You know, the crazy thing is Alex was just popping off. You know, he opened for Ronnie and he was just getting his footing in the acting world and all of that. It was insane.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I'm gonna try my best to, honor him in doing what I do and trying to represent.
Yeah, don't stop.
You know?
Yeah.
It's all we can do because we drove to San Diego one time, me, him, Viet Nguyen, and Andy Van, to do a show.
Yeah.
And he was always just like, damn, we're like the only Viets in comedy. Yeah. We gotta keep going. So I'm gonna try my best.
That dude Viet, man. Yo, that dude he's on another level, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are all good, but that guy is. He's so crazy. Viet is, you know, he can't even speak English. The dude can't even speak English. It's like all like, it's the craziest. Viet is the guy for me that makes the broken English in Vietnamese, like we used to call it Fabi, right?
Yeah.
He's the one that can make it cool.
Right. Yeah, he... he stayed with me. I headlined a show in Utah, and he came with me, and he was just staying at my house for like the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And my parents were, my whole family was dying whenever he would say anything.
Really?
He's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's, you know, he's really smart. All right, I got to talk about your dad, man. That's your dad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It does not feel like your dad in these videos. It's the weirdest shit. He's really your dad.
My dad, yeah. In the cooking videos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did he ever do jail time?
Not serious. You know, not like anything that's worth saying, but
yeah, yeah.
He spent a few days here and there.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, the OG.
How much older is he than you? How old was he when he had you?
He's 50 now. He had me when he was like 22 or 23.
I'm your dad's age.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm your dad's age. I just turned 50 in November.
Oh, shit.
This is crazy. So I'm talking to my son right now. Damn, Will.
Damn,
I got to meet your dad one day, man.
Yeah, that'd be so fun.
So wait, are they living out here in LA with you? Or
my whole family, all in Utah. I'm the only one out here.
So every time you shoot these food ones, you shoot at home.
I fly back to Utah, and we film like 3 or 4 in a row. And then I stockpile them. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he's in Utah, but when he moved to the States, he was in the Bronx at first for a bit, and then Atlanta, and then he did some gang stuff.
You're laughing at it.
Some gang stuff, and then his parents found out, and they were like, this is not good, and they had like an uncle or something in Utah that owned a grocery store, and then they were like, oh, just come move. They told my dad to move to Utah to work for him.
Got it. Okay, so this is what I want to get into. I want a relationship with my children the way your dad has it with you. How did he make that possible?
He's very honest about his mistakes in life. He's not a perfect person. He was a drug addict and a gambling addict and did some other things, you know? And he's very honest with me. And he's like, he told me, he was like, Will, don't ever do meth. Yeah, don't ever do meth. I was like, why? He's like, because that shit is good. You can't, if you do meth, you can't quit.
And had he ever?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was on coke and meth when I was in high school. Wow. And we owned a nail salon when I was growing up. So he was, you know.
Did he lose it?
No, he almost, yeah. The nail salon was pretty busy when I was growing up, but then, cause of his gambling, there was one point when we went from like making like almost $1 million a year to like, food stamps, like within 2 years. Cause he was just gambling so much.
How do you think that affects you?
Me?
Yeah. Cause you watched it, right? You saw it?
Yeah. I went to the casinos with him. I would say I had no interest in doing coke,
yeah,
or meth, because I'm like, I know a lot of people that, you know, do it here and there, but I'm like, for me, I'm like, oh, I think I'm good, you know? I like coffee, I smoke weed sometimes, I like Zin, and I think naturally in my DNA, I'm like, I have an addictive personality.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, let me just stick to these two, three yeah, things that's more chill and stick away from, you know, that kind of stuff. But also him being so honest and being so open, let me be more open with him. Like in our family, if we're having problems, we just talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, you know, this girl didn't respond, or like I did bad at the show or whatever. We're pretty open with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how many of you are there?
I have two brothers.
Younger or older?
Two younger brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, cause that relationship with your dad, man, I think it's really special. Because I was like, at one point, I was like, this can't be his dad because of the bond, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't see this in Vietnamese families, like how close, yeah, you know, dads and sons are, you know?
That's true.
You don't see it. And I'm like, so touched by how close you guys are. Because I mean, that's the work that I do too, right? It's like always talking about like, you know, being close to our parents or being close to my kids. I mean, I make that such a big deal in my life is something that I really want. And then I get to see it with the way your dad. So in many ways, super successful to me. Mm. You could tell your dad that too. Well, hopefully he'll be watching this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, super successful. I think being able to have that relationship with your kids.
Yeah, he was his relationship with his dad was more, I guess, I don't know, stereotypical.
Yeah, traditional.
Yeah, who get beat a lot and, like, you know, always fighting. Like, they couldn't really be in the same room for, like, if we visited my grandparents, it'd be cool for, like, a day or 2 days. And then anything more than that, they start fighting and doing stuff, arguing. And it's more like, then for him, he was, like, I think he's more Americanized because he moved to the States when he was, like, 15 or 16. So he had a good both, and was more like, when I have kids, I want to just be more...
Be different.
Open.
Yeah.
When
did you get into comedy?
I started comedy when I was in college. Yeah, I was 20. I bought a fake ID.
Why did you get into it? What inspired you to get into comedy?
I've always, like, been kind of fascinated. I've always loved watching comedies, like stand-up comedy. It wasn't until I was like, my friend told me, hey, I'm gonna go to an open mic. This is in Utah.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna go to an open mic. And I was like, I thought you had to be famous to like go do it.
You didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know. And I wanted to go watch. I'm like, wait, so anyone can sign up? And I was watching them, and I'm like, damn, these guys suck.
How did you know that you would be better than them?
I didn't know. I knew that I could be as bad as them. You know, I knew I could be that bad. Like, at the bare minimum, I can do that bad. So it's like a fine line. So I watched a few times, and I signed up once or twice. And then finally they let me up. I got like one laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn.
You're hooked.
I killed it. No, but like the
hey, but one laugh. I mean, you did kill it, right?
It was, my heart was beating so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
After, I'm like, damn, I kind of want to feel this again.
Oh, this is my meth right here.
Yeah.
This is my crystal meth right
this
here.
This is my addiction, yeah. So I did that. And then, on the side, I was managing social media for different brands. And then I started managing, I DM'd Jimmy O Yang and was like, hey, can I do your TikTok?
Oh, wow.
Because people are posting your clips and you don't even have an account. And then he responded. This is like when his first special came out.
Was he on that big show yet?
He was on Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley, yeah.
His first comedy special just came out. This is like 2020, I think.
Oh, yeah, recent. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And then I was like, let me do it. And he was like, oh, I'm kind of looking for someone. Let's just try it out for a month, see how it goes. And the first month, I made his account and I blew it up from zero to like 1 million followers.
What?
Yeah, his clips were going crazy viral. And I was just editing them, just posting them. And then after that, he was like, oh, let's keep doing this thing. And then 8 months later, he was like, you want to move to LA and work for me?
Oh my God, what a story.
Yeah, a very crazy story. I just slid in the DMs.
That is crazy lucky.
Yeah. Good timing and you know, so I was like, okay, I was pre-med at the time in college. I didn't even tell my parents. And then I was like, hey, I'm going to try moving to LA to work for Jimmy. I have a job. I can afford rent just to get by. And I want to do stand-up. And then my mom was like, oh, yeah, if anything, this will probably help you get into med school. This is kind of a cool, like, it will stand out on your resume. Who else is doing this?
Right.
And I'm like, I guess that's true. So I went and moved here like 2021, and then I started working for him. And then I didn't have any friends at the time, so I was like, my way to get out of the house was doing comedy, you know?
Yeah.
So
how long did you work for Jimmy for?
Up until like, I think like early 5.
That's a long time.
Like 3 years, 3-4 years.
That's a long time. Yeah. You still keep in touch with Jimmy?
Yeah. We're still pretty close. I got to open for him a few times last year.
Yeah.
In San Jose, actually. That was crazy. That was like, we did 2 shows. It was like 3,000 people. And then like biggest venue I've ever did. And it was
So cool. when you open for a Jimmy O Yang, right? You basically, I mean, it's almost like you made it, right? I mean, if you think about it, right? I mean, we're not talking about like you got your own Netflix special or anything like that yet, but basically, you just have to do more of that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, how does that affect the trajectory of your career?
It doesn't.
It doesn't?
No, I don't think it does. It's a cool credit.
Yeah, but it doesn't affect it.
No, it's just kind of like, you're only as good as your last show.
Yeah.
I just gotta, it's like, okay, that's cool. And then the big thing is, I need to keep doing that bigger venue so I can be more comfortable. It's a different thing. I got to open for my friend Jason in Asia in December, and we traveled to like 6 different countries, and most of them were theaters. And it was really from there I got more comfortable performing in front of theaters and in front of over like 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's like you had to be more physical, be more, talk different a little bit than at a club.
So the bigger the audience at a comedy show, the more you have like more energy, or it's just a different leverage mentally?
It's not more energy, it's more like, because they can, you're so small on the stage.
Yeah.
So like I felt like I had to like be a little bit more expressive
with
how I moved. Versus at a club, they can all see me, so they can really see like my micro things, my face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, stuff like that.
Are you cold, man?
A little bit.
Here, let me give you my jacket. All
right? No, it's fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't mind. I'm no. high. I'm no, gonna show. I'm, you know. You sure? No. Let me give
okay,
it to
I'll
you.
Okay, I'll wear it.
Let me get to you. We're about to. First time on.
Take it off.
We gotta hide your nipples, man.
This episode about to be on OnlyFans, yo.
I know you manage OnlyFans. We'll get into that. So, all right. So then, Jimmy is who started your sort of coming to LA. But what about the Instagram videos? Like, when did that like kick in?
Like the cooking stuff?
Yeah. The cooking stuff and yeah.
You know what it was? Me and my friend Jason, the one I go on tour with.
Yeah.
We made a bet. We were like, oh, let's just try to post 3 times a week. Just to keep, if you want to really do this thing, we should keep posting like minimum 3 times a week. And then I was posting some stand-up stuff. I posted some skits. And I'm like, I don't know what to post. And then I also work with Uncle Roger.
Yeah.
So I'm able to like kind of see how he shoots his food things. So with that and the comedy, and I was like, and then I posted a video of me and my dad eating like Hubby Loam, like the
egg. Yeah.
So, and then it did pretty good. And I was like, we should keep doing this. And then I kind of just flew back and I'm like, let's just film like 2 or 3 and see how it goes. And then.
Cause your dad is a riot.
Dude, he's crazy.
He's crazy.
We don't even script those. I like. Give him, you know, certain things, but like it's mostly just him saying stuff.
Yeah, because it's almost like you take a back seat when he's on live, you know?
Yeah, because he's such a character.
Character.
That I can't really let him do his thing.
You can't really compete with that.
Yeah.
I see that. I'm like, whoa, it's like, this is your dad's show.
Yeah. I let him, because he's so funny. He gets me saying crazy shit, and I'm like, I just record.
This is Daddy Pepper's show.
Yeah,
he needs his own show. Damn, it's crazy. So that kicked off with Hope It Long.
Yeah.
Cause that episode was funny, because when you said Hope It Long, and he's like, I don't know if you caught that, but he tried to correct you. He's like, cause you didn't use the right accent, so it becomes a different word, you know?
Right. It becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's kids around here, but can't say it.
There'll be kids that watch this. Yeah, it's great. So it's like all of these things that happen in your life are like things that you don't really plan for.
Yeah, I guess so. Now that I think about it. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
I mean, the open mic thing, I mean, you needed to be exposed to that, and then you do it, right?
Right.
And then you're like, I gotta show up to that thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about it. It's more like I guess I'm kind of like I have goals and I have things I want to do, but I'm still open to whatever life has
happened.
Yeah.
So as a stand-up, right? Like when you're going through this journey in the last 5 years, how do you get better? At doing it? I mean, is it really a matter of just like showing up to the open mics all the time? Or is it something else? Like you got to study the tape more of like, you know, Chappelle, Chris Rock, and you got to just go harder.
I think watching them helps and going to open mics helps. But like the only way to get better is to get more stage time. And stage time in LA is really hard to get.
Really?
Good stage time. And how do you get, because when I was planning, when I first said, okay, I'm going to take this more serious, I was like, how do I get more stage time on like good shows? I need to get booked. And they only book you if you're famous. If you're famous, you can sell tickets or they're doing you a favor. One of the three. And I was like, okay, so what do I have to offer right now? I can't really sell tickets. I'm not famous. So I'm like, so I started doing my own show. I started producing a show with my friend Maddie in Mid-City. And it was like mainly Asian comics that I would book. But it was like a good show. It sold out. We had like some big people stop by. And now everyone wants to do my show. So
what's the name of the show?
I stopped doing that, but it was called Mid-City Comedy. But they were like, oh, basically they're like, if you let me do your show, you can do my show.
What?
Yeah, when I was first starting. So then that's how I got it.
That's how you got more stage time.
Yeah, because they were like, everyone wants to do Will's show. So they're like,
why'd you stop it?
I started going on the road and
making bigger money.
Yeah, making more money, getting on shows without having to do this. So it was just a vehicle for me to get that going. But
see, and that's the thing. These things, again, you can't plan it. Like,
right.
How did you know that bartering system between you and the other comics were going to happen, right?
It's like unspoken. Like everyone's...
But did you know that when you started?
Jimmy told me, actually. It was like, because he started a show at Hooters when he was first starting. So I was like, okay, I need to do a show. That's like a good show. I don't want like a, you know, a bad show. So that one. And then I was like, because it's so hard to sell tickets. The first show sold out easily because I just invited everyone that I knew. But then the second show, they were like, oh, you know what I mean? I can't invite the same people. So then I became friends with people I met off of like Facebook Marketplace, like Uber drivers, just like anyone, just casual conversation. Like, hey, I have a show. You want to come on Thursday? And then like, okay, yeah, you seem like you were making me laugh right now. So they just came. Yeah. And then just anyone that would be down to come. It's just to fill seats so like bigger comics would come. And then that's where I met Jason Chenney. I booked him. And then I put myself before him. So he had to watch my set. He had to watch. Like, if you're going to come. And then I paid like $100 for 10 minutes for like the bigger comedians. And then, so he watched my set, and then I booked him 6 months later, again. I did, like, pretty much new jokes, and I put myself before him again. And then he was like, oh, shit, you want to open for me in Ontario? And I was like, okay. And then I did good, and then we just kind of kept doing it, and I've been touring with him for, like, 2 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Who are your icons? Who do you, like?
Oh man, I really, the first special I think I ever watched was Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart.
Yeah. I watched that so many times.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That one special, you just watch it over and over and over again?
Yeah, I think it's like Laugh at My Pain or what's it called? Little Big Man or something.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah, and then I really like Xing Wang too.
Yeah, Xing Wang, she's great.
I can't really do like, I can't make Lotion funny. Like, he'll make something so specific, so funny that I really like.
Costco, you know?
Right.
Yeah, very, he just drills down into, like, the micro details, and it just expands it, and that's what kind of makes it, like, interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just never think, like, buying pants at Costco is a funny thing until, you know, he talks about it, and you're just like,
specific things.
Very specific. He drills down on it, yeah.
Ali Sadiq, do you know him?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Yeah, he's so fun. I love his stories. And I'm like, I tell stories mainly in my stand-up. Yeah, you know? So yeah. I'm like, okay, it's like someone that I like aspire to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the storytelling part is what Chappelle nails down.
Because
now he's just sitting and he's just like telling you a story, like a very basic story. But the way it comes out, it's just so funny.
Right.
So charismatic, right? It's just so relaxed. And then you get absorbed into like the moment. And then it just like, it hits you at some point where he delivers a punchline or something like that. And you're like, damn, that's a genius.
Dude, I don't know. Yeah, it's just like, it's so hard. Comedy's so hard. It's just like, you can, two people can say the exact same thing, but it's just how they say it.
Yeah.
Their voice or their body language is just like, it makes it so different.
I'm not calling you a funny looking guy, but you do look pretty fucking funny.
Thank you.
You and I, when people look at you, that's your advantage. Like,
right. You, I try.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is why I look like this. This is why I'm not buff right now, okay? If it wasn't for my comedy career, I'd be have a six pack.
Do you want to do it?
I mean, eventually.
Wait, do you think, okay, that, I wanted to ask you about that actually. Do you think that would change your comedy? If you recompositioned your body?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Explain that. In the
beginning, it was like, I didn't know how to be funny. So it was a lot of like self-deprecating jokes.
Yeah.
Difficult things. Now it's like, the stories that, like, you know, it didn't really, and my goal is to not make it, like, more stories where it doesn't really matter how I look. And how I look helps, but also it's like, you know, it shouldn't rely on how I look, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I first came across you when you were doing Uncle Roger, when you were working on Uncle Roger as the loan shark.
Oh, yeah.
How did you meet Uncle Roger?
I met Nigel through Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
It was some party thing, and he just moved here, and he was like, oh, I'm looking for someone to help me on my videos.
Oh, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since you guys were shooting in Griffith Park, and you like, it looked like it. It was like whatever parks around here.
Right.
You're like being tied up, or like it's just like
all this, tying him up,
and yeah. It was like, I was so I think that's when I first saw you come up. That was for me when I began to get exposed to your work.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
it was with Uncle Roger.
He's dope. Yeah, he's like super. Nigel's super chill. Unlike Uncle Roger.
Nigel's super chill, unlike Uncle Roger.
Yeah. Uncle Roger, I get scared when he's in the room.
Really? I'm kidding. That's some funny shit. I actually hung out with him twice. We went karaokeing one time, and he's just a really like quiet kind of guy.
He's chill, yeah.
Super chill.
Yeah.
Super chill kind of guy.
Yeah. He loves karaoke though, holy fuck.
Oh, he does.
We were in Dubai in January.
Yeah.
And for some like thing, and then I was jet lagged and we didn't sleep, and he's like, yo, let's go to karaoke. Cause we had to go to the airport super early. He's like, let's go to karaoke. And it was like, we were like, he was going in, and then I had some to drink too. So I'm like, okay, karaoke actually is pretty fun. Because when I was younger, karaoke was just my auntie screaming in the morning.
Exactly.
No pitch. Yeah, so this is kind of fun.
So when you think about like the last, let's say, 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, I've studied you, and I'm thinking you, it feels like you did all the right things. And then some, like these things kind of like helped with serendipity and people that you meet along the way in the last 5 years. But what do you think? And I'm just asking for guidance for like younger comedians or younger artists. What do you think in the last 5 years that you could have done more to like even propel your career even further?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think when I was first starting out, I wasn't really sure what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I was doing social media for a lot of people. So I was probably not getting up as much as I should have.
Wait, getting on stage?
Yeah, performing as much, or like dedicating much to my craft as I probably should have been time-wise.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I was trying to do everything. I was like editing for like, I worked with like Nexshark too, and like some other brands and stuff like that. And I was making like $10,000 a month when I first moved here. I was making way more money when I first moved here than I am now.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and then but then it's like, I was like, oh, it's fine. I'll just work, and at night I'll go do the open mic, and then it'll be fine. And then, but then it's like, that's not how it works.
How does it work?
How it works is that you work all day, you get up at 8, and then you work on from home and edit, And by the time I guess at 7, you're like exhausted. And then even if some nights I was like, oh, I'm just too lazy. But even if I would go out, it wouldn't really be the best to my ability. So it's like, you can't really, if you really want to make it as an artist, you have to
do the art.
Do the art and then sacrifice the money. And like, some, it's going to be hard. Like, you got my math, use your credit cards. Yeah. And like, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But dude, that makes so much sense. And that's like not usually talked about a lot, because what you're saying is you need to be fresh.
Yeah.
You need to be like empowered. Like, you have to have that power going into the practice and not be spent.
Right. Like, you need to have time to do nothing and then like really just think about what you want to say or what you want to do. Cause that takes like half of my comedy. I'm like going a walk, or I'm
processing.
Driving. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just like, and I need that time a few hours a day just to not do work or not do anything, just to process. And that takes time too. And then you have to factor that in too.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to shower and you have to do laundry and pay bills and do all those things and sleep. So it's like, there's only so many hours in a day, and you have to prioritize the art if you're going to take it serious.
Man, I wish somebody told me that in my 20s, you know?
Yeah.
Because that makes all the difference in the world. When you think about it is, you know, you think as a young person, you're 24 years old and you're just getting into LA and you're a musician or a film person and you're trying to figure out like where you're going, but you're talented, right? You're just, you know, you're talented. Right. Everybody wants you.
Right.
And you're making good money, right? You're making 10K, you're making good money editing, you're doing whatever it is. But the reality is like the art of what you really brought into the world suffers. But there is this flip side of all of this, which is, being exposed to the social media side for Jimmy Yang, Jimmy O Yang, also probably gave you an opening into all of it. Because then you got open into Uncle Roger, you got exposed to all the technical things that these guys were doing.
Right, right. I think, I think that was probably good. But also, I was doing way up a bunch of other shit too. Yeah. I'm like, I just need to just make enough to pay rent and just get by.
And get on stage.
Yeah, and then that leaves you more time to get on stage. You know, you don't need to make more than that. But I don't know, it's so hard. I think it was that. Also, I think meeting people that are kind of like in the community of comedy, for me, helped propel me. Because I'm like, you feel like you're a part of something instead of just like a solo thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think like that was what really helped me. I'm like, okay, this is, it's like a fun time. It doesn't feel like work going to an open mic if my friends are going to be there.
Right, 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 right.
Something
right.
That helped a lot too.
What do you think makes a good comedian?
Trauma.
Trauma makes it. Trauma makes a good artist.
Trauma makes a good artist.
When your dad's like yelling at you and you get traumatized.
Right. I think, oh man, what makes a good comedian? There's so many different things. I think, honestly, it is trauma.
It's what, like, kind of trauma did you have?
Oh man. I mean, I talked about it before on a different podcast, so I think it's fine. I think my dad, so when I was in high school, when my dad was on the peak of his
drug terror,
and then gambling and some of that. But then he would he was fucking some of the Neltex, right?
And is he still married to your mom?
Yes, no, they're still
together.
Yeah, they're good now. He's like sober. He got shit. You know what I mean? He's clean and he figured his life out. So I'm very proud of him. But when I was younger, he was not so good.
Okay.
And he was doing some fuck shit.
Yeah.
And then he filmed it. Because he was trying to quit. Oh, no, she was trying to quit the Neltech. And then he was like, oh, if you quit, I'm going to show this to your family. Right? That you. Because she had a family too.
Yeah, your dad is savage.
He a G. Savage. He about that life. But so then he couldn't find the video. It's like somewhere in his email. But do you know who knows how to use his email?
You do.
Me. So I was in the nail office. It was Saturday. Busy, like packed, people waiting.
And did he assign you to go look for the video?
He was like, how do you, Will, how you find the email, the video on the email? And then I was like, what do you mean? There's a search bar. You just search whatever. So I was like, I can't find it. So I searched it and then I saw the video. I didn't watch the video. I did jerk off to it later. No, I'm kidding.
You're a sick man.
No, but I saw the thumbnail. And then I'm like, what the? Because he has a really big tattoo.
Yeah.
So in the thumbnail, you see him have like a... All you see is him.
Yeah.
You don't really see the girl. So I'm like, brother...
How are you blackmailing anybody?
Huh?
How is he going to blackmail?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, bro, if you send this to anyone, the only person you're outing is yourself. Don't send this. It's a bad look.
How old were you?
Like 15.
And you had the sense to tell him that.
Yeah. Because I was like... I feel like since my parents had me so young, I feel like I grew up with them. We're like, they're parents first, but then, you know, friends also.
Oh, wow.
Because they were like so young in their early 20s, having kids, trying to figure it out. Yeah, so they don't know what the fuck they're doing. So we're just kind of, you know, so I give them some leeway.
So you told him at 15, Dad, do not show this video. You're not outing anybody but yourself.
Yeah.
And what did he say to that?
Well, he kind of forgot I was there. Like he was so like in the moment and on drugs that he like didn't clock that like I just told my son that, and I'm cheating on his mom. Do you know what I mean? Like he didn't mean like it was just like a yeah. So then a week after my mom found out because she found like the video somewhere and yeah it was
traumatizing.
It was rough, but yeah.
You know? Man, how'd they stay together? That's crazy.
And she was about to leave. And then she just, she kind of gave him like an ultimatum. It was like, hey, like, you know, like you have to clean up, quit gambling. And like, this is your last chance.
And did he clean up after that?
Yeah, he did. We did, cleaned up. We actually, he sold the nail salons before COVID. So he got pretty lucky.
Wow.
And then they moved. I grew up in Phoenix. This is all in Phoenix. And then they sold the business and moved back to Utah with my grandparents and, you know, the extended family.
Yeah.
And then I did ayahuasca with my dad before.
Wow. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
How did that even come up?
I was kind of experimenting with psychedelics.
Yeah.
During COVID.
Okay.
And then my friend did ayahuasca first. And then he told me about his experience and how like he felt healed and some of his trauma. And I told my mom about it. Like, oh, my friend Chris really... You know Chris Lee?
Chris Lee?
Yeah.
Is he another videographer?
He's a creative director, but he was at Nike for like a few years. But he's based in Utah, but like, he's like kind of like, you know, in the Vietnamese community.
Why does it sound so familiar?
Yeah, but anyway, he told me about it. And I told my mom, and then she did her own research and was like, a year after that, she was like, hey, me and your dad are going to go do ayahuasca.
What?
In Orlando. Yeah.
And they did it?
They did it.
Before you?
Before me. Because I was kind of scared. I was like, I don't know about the whole thing, but they did it. And they came back and they seemed a lot closer.
My God, wow.
And they healed a lot of their own stuff. And... my dad actually was like, it was so intense. He was like begging for his life. He told me, he was like, he just couldn't handle it. And he's like, I think I had to go one more time. And then a year after that, he invited me and my younger brother, Ethan, to go do it with him in Orlando.
And how was it?
It was beautiful. It was, for me, it was really nice. Cause I had a cousin of mine pass away a year before that.
Yeah.
And I got to see him. And I feel like I healed a lot of stuff that I felt.
I used to say this in the beginning of my early years of my podcast. I was like, I used to come for like a comedian, right? I used to come to like have this conversation with a comedian or a rapper or a musician. But man, the richness, the texture of life comes out way beyond the art that they do. And that's what makes this work so interesting as a creative, or, you know, the fact that, you know, the question is, what makes a good comedian trauma? Trauma comes. Good comedy comes from trauma. And then this whole thing, ayahuasca with your father, and how beautiful. Like, that whole trajectory is like something that I think most parents should go through with their child.
I think so too.
Right?
I think so too.
Like, what kind of an awesome experience is you getting to do ayahuasca with your dad?
I know. He was going through it. He was like throwing up for hours.
On the one with you?
Yeah. Just like throwing up his trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting it out. But he couldn't. Nothing was coming out. He was dry heaving for hours.
And what about you?
I was crying a lot. Me and my brother. I threw up a little bit, but...
Were you crying about?
I saw my cousin pass away from suicide a year before. And then we were born 2 weeks apart. So we were very close growing up, like best friends. And then when he passed, we got in an argument. And then it was a really dumb thing, but I just coincidentally moved to LA 3 months after. So we didn't talk until I saw him on Thanksgiving, and it was kind of awkward. And then 2 weeks before he passed, he drove up to LA, and we were just hanging out for a few days, like old times. And then I'm like, this is nice. Like I missed his hang. And then he passed away. And then I'm like, oh man, I should have called him. You know, I should have called him more. I should have been more present and you know, spend more time with family. But in my trip, it was just a collection of memories of us just hanging out when we were kids, when we were older, driving, singing a song, going to the gym. And I'm like, oh, I shouldn't feel guilty. I should be grateful that I do have these memories.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Shout out to your cousin and to Alex, man. All these guys that, yeah, that's traumatic to lose people like this too, right?
Yeah, because it's not... When my grandpa passed, it was sad, but he was like kind of, he was older.
Yeah.
When they're young, when they're not supposed to pass, and they do pass, I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's not supposed to happen. Yeah. But it does.
Hey, have you been to Vietnam?
Yeah, I love it. I've been a few times.
When's the last time?
I went last year.
Okay. Did you ever go to any comedy shows in Vietnam?
I did a comedy show in Vietnam.
Which one?
At some jazz bar.
Okay. Who organized it?
Ankita.
Okay.
Do you know her?
I don't.
She's like Indian.
The Vietnamese comedy scene is blowing up.
Yeah, Saganteo.
Saganteo, yeah.
Yeah.
Saganteo is, somebody took me to Saganteo last year, and it was amazing.
Yeah, they're really good. So my show, I co-headline with... Wee Lay?
Yeah,
I
think Wee Lay is like one of the OGs in Saganteo.
He created it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got to do it. And he hasn't done a comedy in English in forever. So it was fun to see him. But he's a good guy.
So you actually did one?
Yeah, I did last year, yeah.
Did it. How was it?
It was small. We did two shows. It was like 60 people each. It was fun. The crowd was great.
Did it land? Did your material land?
I was killing the game. No, I'm kidding. It was fun. Yeah, people were... They're really like... Well, I guess it's different. You know, like Saigon and especially like District 1 or District 2. It's like they're pretty... They all speak English.
Yeah, they all speak... Everybody speaks English in Vietnam.
Americanized.
And yeah.
Get all my references. They did it. I was talking about ayahuasca and then they're like, oh yeah. So they do it over there. I tried a few jokes in Vietnamese that they did not land.
Ironically, huh?
My Vietnamese is terrible.
So, do you, like, what is next? What is new? Like, what's the next thing?
Yeah, I've been, there's like different stages of comedy.
Uh-huh.
There's like open mic, and there's bringer shows, and then you're a host, or you're cold open, host, feature, and then headliner.
Wait, is this an official trajectory that you're describing?
Pretty much.
Everybody knows it.
If you're in comedy, yeah.
Okay, one more time. Open mic.
Open mic. Bringer shows.
Bringer shows, what's that?
Bringer shows means you get booked on a show, but you only can perform if you bring people.
Okay, how long? Okay.
Four to five people.
That's it. You just need to bring four or five people.
And then you get 5 minutes.
Okay, so bring your shows.
And then host or cold open.
Okay.
Like, you pretty much open a show. You go first. And then host is like, you know, you're like the host.
Yeah, yeah, you're the host.
Yeah. And then you get, host gets paid. You get booked. You start getting paid for comedy. And then feature. And then headliner. So when you make the big bucks. I'm a feature right now. I was a host and I was doing cold open like last year, and now I've been featuring for the past year, and I'm starting to headline smaller shows. I've headlined like maybe 10 shows so far in Utah or Phoenix. Mm-hmm. I've headlined a few here, and I'm headlining my biggest show on April 24th in San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy.
Yeah, that's my daughter's birthday, April 24th. We were trying to figure out, is that last year or this year? But it's this year.
This year.
2026, April 24th. Where is it going to be at? San Francisco, right?
Yeah, San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy.
Yeah.
It's the biggest venue I've ever headlined.
How many people? How many seats?
400.
Wow, it's a big...
400. I think I'm like the first Vietnamese.
And it's sold out yet or not yet?
I've sold 3 tickets.
So now what?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I think I have this. Well, it's 400 total.
Yeah.
But because there's like upstairs and downstairs. So if I get to 200, the downstairs would be sold out and it'll still be a good show. So my goal is just 200.
All right. Well, we'll try to get people in the Bay Area to go see Will Pepper's show, okay?
My dad will be there.
Your dad will be there? So it's, what day is that? It's Friday.
Friday?
Yeah, it's a Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter wants to go. She's sitting right there. She's like, I want to go.
You want to come tell some jokes?
And wait, is it PG-13? Is it? No, it's rated R, right?
It's pretty, yeah. I mean, there's a few things as like more, but it's 18, I guess.
Yeah, I let my kids listen to a lot. Yeah, I don't hold back. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, don't you think with the way that you grew up, I mean, your dad probably didn't hold back, right?
No.
He never, like, I don't... That's the thing. I don't feel like we should hold back with our kids.
It's because they're going to grow up in the real world.
Right?
And they're going to hear it anyway on TikTok or whatever.
Yeah, they're going to see it. They're going to be exposed to all of it. So, like...
The first time I smoked weed was with my dad, actually.
Really? Yeah. How old were you?
I didn't even smoke till I was 18. Which is, like, older.
Yeah, yeah. But most of my smoked weed with your dad.
Yeah, when I was 18 at my birthday.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, if you're going to do it, you should do it with me so you know how... It's supposed to feel like.
Right, right, right.
In case you go outside and you do it with someone else, and you're like, oh, this is not normal.
I think I've asked this question with all the comedians who've been on the show before. But I feel like in order to be a really good comedian, you kind of have to be smart. I think any job that you do in the entertainment business, you got to be smart. You got to be really intelligent to do what you do in order to make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, I would say so. Or not, I don't know about intelligence, but at least emotional intelligence.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Like, every good comedian, if you ask any comedian to do like an ACT or whatever, they're retarded.
Yeah.
But if they're like, they look at a person, I think they can read the room or
read
the energy, yeah. I think. And then, like, you have to be able to read the room and, like,
and move.
Understand. Yeah. At the bare minimum, just to be a good comic, you have to do that.
Yeah.
So at least that. But most of them are, book smart wise, they're retarded.
Yeah. Most of them are not. And I think a lot of comedians, too, have been, that I met, are like, a lot of them are introverted.
That's a good point. Yeah. Very few of them are like out there.
Out there. Yeah. Very few are like extroverts.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing.
I mean, I think I'm an introvert.
I can feel that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you walked up, I was like, "Yeah, you're probably an introvert."
Damn, you should be people. You should do comedy, bro.
I swear, Will, I've dreamt of it my entire life. But here's the problem with that. I think in order to be a good anything, like a singer, a comedian, like you have to have a good memory.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have a really good memory because I think other than that, I think I wouldn't. I think I could do it. But I just don't have the memory to, like, remember. Maybe, well, I'm wrong. I don't know.
I don't think it's that. Memory is not even a thing to me. Because it's like, by the time you've heard it on Netflix, they've done that joke 10,000 times. 10,000 times over and over again, where it's not even
a memory thing anymore.
Yeah, they do it. You do it literally every night, the same joke. And then you're just tweaking it slowly until it gets better. And if it's a good joke, it's not something you have to remember. It's like, it's what you would say naturally anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But even at 50, you think I got a shot at this?
I think it's, I wouldn't even put so much pressure. Just try it.
Well, look, this is why I joke around about it. It's because I think, like, when you think about, like, a sport, right? Like a basketball thing, or, you know, you want to be a pro athlete in something, you cross train, right? Like, if you're in basketball, then you run. You know, cross training. As a podcaster and as a host of, like, shows that I do, it only benefits me if I've had stand-up background, right?
That's true.
So I think about that all the time.
Stand-up or improv, right?
Improv, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think about it all the time. But
have you ever tried an open mic?
Never.
Really?
I talk to all the comedians, like Fred, Alex, these guys, you know.
Oh, man.
All the time, but I'm like, scared. I'm just scared. And then I told to myself, 2026 was the year that I would get up and do it.
Just see what happens.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to be good. But
yeah.
Also, it's new. No one is good.
Right.
If you go to open mic, they're all bad, so it's fine. Like, I'm telling you, after you go to an open mic and you see them, and you're like, yeah, I can do that bad.
Right.
I can keep the line consistent. Yeah. It won't be crazy. And even if it is, it's like, everyone's like, yeah, no one really cares.
And getting the butterflies out is, like, important, because sometimes when I go on stage to host a show or whatever, sometimes I have butterflies, and sometimes I don't feel free enough, like in a podcast, right, to say whatever I want. But I think if you're doing open mics enough, all that becomes second nature, and you just become you.
Yeah, open mics. I don't even know if I got better at stand-up. Sometimes I go to an open mic and I'm like, did I get worse? Because it's like, it's all comedians that watch.
Wow.
And comedians have a very different sense of humor than a normal crowd. But I would say the open mic, for me, I use it more of like I just need to get these words out and just say them in order for me to figure out how to say them. And also you meet people and it's kind of like the hang. It's the main thing. But
Yeah,
I think, and then the shows, once you have a tight 10 minutes or whatever, you can kind of be more free, because you know I have these really good jokes I can fall back on if it doesn't go well, that kind of thing, yeah.
The future of what you do, I feel how, like, when I'm thinking about how to construct a bit or how to construct some ideas, how much AI do you use?
I don't use AI.
Why?
I tried it. It's terrible.
Why is it terrible?
It's too new or something. I don't know. But I tried to, like, I'll write a joke about this, and it's just like very basic twist. And I guess what I'm, for my thing is, like, my thing is so personal. I want to talk about these traumatic things on stage, because I talked to a lot of nail salon kids and stuff, and all their parents were doing fuck straight. I know it's relatable. I know many people love gambling. I know they love drugs. And it's like, there's good and bad, but I want to talk about it because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
I can't have AI. It's like a...
But can't AI help you kind of put the structure together and expand a joke, or...
I think AI is good for admin things. Make me a schedule to write some jokes or something. That's what I use it more for. But for the ideas and stuff, because it just sounds a little bit too robotic.
Yeah.
And not me. And I kind of can tell some, when I watch a comic and they maybe use AI, I can tell them how the structure is. It's like, it's too, like, blah, 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 twists. Actually, it's this. Actually, it's like this. And I'm like, that's not unique or...
You got corrupted.
Original.
Yeah.
But also, it's a, you know, to each their own. If it works out for you, it's great, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got one of the jobs that are going to be probably protected in the future, right? Because we want to see human beings being authentic.
Right.
Fuck shit kids from nail salon workers, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It would be really hard. I feel like, I mean, who knows, but it would be really hard for AI to replace this. or like comedy in general.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, actually, that's a lie. At least, hopefully I'm big enough where I can like just license out my voice or something. And AI can just do it for me. I can just stay home and play like Call of Duty or something.
So let's remind everybody. So April 24th, he's only got 3 tickets sold. We're going to crank this up to 300 or 400 tickets that we need to get sold out there, right?
Yeah, from 300 to 300. That's going to happen.
That's doable.
Yeah, that's doable. We have a month.
Yeah. But you know, I think the technique is to let everybody know how dire straits you're in right now because because you probably sold 100 or 200 tickets already and you just want to have more people.
Maybe.
Will Pepper, one last thing. And you go over it all the time. You're Vietnamese, but why the hell do you have Pepper as your last name? I know why, but let's talk about that last thing.
Yeah. I was born, my last name, Thieu, which means pepper.
Yeah.
And my dad wanted to open up a nail salon, but his credit was really bad. And maybe he was on drugs, but he was like, oh, if we all had white sounding last names, we would get approved for the business loan. And it worked.
Oh, it did work.
I mean, I don't know if it worked because of that, but he changed the name and we opened a business. So maybe it's coincidence, but...
That is hilarious, man.
The thing that people don't know is that he changed all of our names when I was in high school.
Everybody's name?
My whole family. When I was in high school. It wasn't like he changed it when you were young or something.
Yeah.
No, I was like a sophomore in high school. And he changed it on a Tuesday.
My God.
And I'm like, wait till spring break or... I don't know, like you can't just Tuesday Thieu and come back Wednesday Pepper. And then like, you know what I mean? Everyone's like, what happened? You know? And I'm like, my dad hates salt. Or like, I always make up a different story every time because I don't know how to explain it.
That's why you're so funny, man. Yeah. This is traumatic. That's a traumatic... I mean, it's not like, no, take the whole summer off. Or let's move cities and then you become a Will Pepper in another city.
It's the same place, same city, on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. Went to court. Right in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
School year.
Came back. They were like, Pepper? I was like, yeah, I don't know. And then they were... I was the only, pretty much one of the few Asians in Phoenix, in my school.
Yeah.
It was all black or Hispanic. So, I was getting clowned like crazy. I was fighting for my life every day. They were just roasting me. So I had to learn how to say shit back. Otherwise, I'm just going to get bullied, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like one of the few Asians there. So I'm like, I'm not going to be like those, you know, there was like a few Asians there that were like, just kind of like quiet and didn't really. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm going to be the opposite. I'm going to talk my shit.
But you know, you could have had a name like Will Thieu.
Yeah.
That flows too, but I guess it's Will Pepper from now on.
I guess so.
It's a great story, man. Will, thank you so much for coming on today, man. I really appreciate you being here.
Dude, thank you for having me, bro. I love it. I love Vietnamese. Yeah.
You love Vietnamese what?
I love people.
Anything Vietnamese.
Anything Vietnamese, I support because there's not enough of us trying to do stuff.
Yeah.
I think the few of us that are here, we should stick together and then we'll be better.
Okay, where can they find your tickets for your show?
Oh, willpeppercomedy.com. All my stuff is there.
Okay, thank you so much, Will.
Thanks. Yay. Vietnam.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.